no gubernatorial control on experiments. What we mean by that is if you come in and you say, I'm interested in this concept, we're not going to tell you, that's a really stupid idea, you shouldn't do that. Or you shouldn't do that because somebody's already done it. Right? What we will say is, you need to do it safely, and you need to do it legally. And remember, we're a BSL-1 lab, so if you can do it within those guidelines, you can do it here. If you can't, I'm sorry, you're going to have to do it someplace else. So that's kind of how we organize that. We also make sure that people know what they're doing. And don't let them into the lab until they've been trained and had some kind of an orientation so that we are comfortable and we think that they're comfortable too. The other thing that's interesting in a community lab, and Ellen, I think you probably can speak to this too, if you have a lab that's really open, if you're in there and you're working on something, someone a little jared will come up and say, hey, Christina, what are you working on today? And the person who then screens all their stuff and hides it, that's it. It's a gigantic red flag. So there's a huge amount of community oversight that happens in a space like ours, and that is absolutely and totally intentional. If you come in, the slide I showed, you can read part of the reason that's in there, so you can see how the lab is set up. It's meant to be transparent. When I come in, and you'll see this on Thursday, when you walk into the lab area, you can see to the other end of the room. That's on purpose. The storage that we use, transparent. We had, very, heated, spirited arguments about what that storage should look like, but by God, it should be transparent, so that way we can see what people are working on. And usually after I do my spiel about why we're safe and why we're okay, and we're really not doing anything bad, if I still get pushback, I say, who would you rather have doing biotech? Or Korea? No offense. Some secret governmental test. Last budget. Someone working alone in their mother's basement. Or some sweet community person in a community lab. So why we did it? Again, we wanted to democratize biotech. We wanted to bring science down from the ivory tower. You shouldn't have to have 14 graduate degrees in order to do science. If you do, that's cool. I don't. Some of y'all do, but I don't. Cheap access to tools, really cross-pollinate science and engineering, which for us is really huge because of where we're at in the world. And one of the things that I really care about is trying to inspire that next generation of scientists so that we are kind of growing our own here in terms of scientific talent. Most importantly, I think one of the things that I'm really proud of is that we actually did something. We talked about it for a really long time, and then we actually did it. And once we did it, it was incredibly cool. A little scary, but mostly cool. People will tell you it starts with an idea. I don't agree with that. I think it starts with people. Because I think an idea is great, an idea is fine, but it doesn't do anything. People do things. And when you have people that are doing things, that's when something takes flight. You will look at some of us have very interesting backgrounds which have nothing to do with science. So we took that idea, we took those people, we got some money, and we worked with a bunch of volunteers, which if you volunteer motivation is really different than employee motivation. And I've spent my career working on employee motivation, and it's very different. Big learning experience. Many times we're trading experience for time, and that's okay. We're balancing consensus, again, the talking with the doing, because both are important. It's good to get buy-in, but at a certain point, you got to do something. So, like I said, we're really fortunate early on and got some nice publicity with our Kickstarter campaign, and thought, oh, this will be really great, this will be super helpful. Until we got a call from the Planning Commission of Mountain View, who had seen something in the local newspaper and said, oh, great, you want to move to Mountain View, we'd like you to come meet with us, you crazy hacker people, you. So we did. And at the end of the day, the main takeaway was we were going to Sunnyvale because the list of regulations were so long and so onerous, we would have had no money left by the time we opened our doors. So we said, we're going to build this nice, sweet community lab, we're going to talk to people, we're going to educate people. They heard meth lab, hydroponics, we don't have anything, we have a con, it was great. And Joseph mentioned this morning, we had, I think, these are all the buildings we looked at and couldn't get. This one?
I broke the internet.
This one, that one. This is our beautiful building, very boring looking. This is our beautiful building. And really, at the end of the day, we didn't do anything different other than I wore my best business suit when we went to go look at buildings instead of showing up in my jeans. And found landlord that believed in what we were doing and said, that sounds kind of cool. And that made all the difference in the world. So after that, it was time to open. I'm going to skip through these because I'm going longer than I wanted to. Yeah. So we decided we put a stake in the ground and said, we've got these classes coming for Singularity University. And one of our founders, Raymond, who's back there, is the biotech chair, and said, okay, we're going to do some lab classes there. So we had a date, and then we freaked out because we had a date and a building, and it was empty, and the people were coming, and we freaked out, and we had our friend Derek come down from Vancouver and help us. And we enlisted everyone we knew to come over and put our benches together, and we bribed people with pizza and free babysitting until we finally got it done. And in those first classes, people sequenced, extracted some of their own DNA. We did a sequence on it, and then we analyzed the results bioinformatically. It was a huge hit. It was very, very, very fun. Here's some pictures. Here's Derek. And it wasn't until that first day, after people had already gone through the lab, that I looked at Raymond and I said, oh my God, this might actually work. So it was at that point that I thought, okay, we might be able to do this. Now on day two, I was by myself with Derek explaining genomic privacy. And some of you might recognize somebody in the audience. It was George Church, who had decided to come by and say hi. And I was freaking out because I am not a geneticist by training. I'm not an ethnic person by training. And here was the god of genomics looking at me, wanting to know what I thought about genomic privacy. So that was fun. Anyway, nearly a year later, it's evolution in action. I mean, we've seen some interesting things happen. We have seen waves of volunteers come and go. And sometimes the people that get you there are not the people that take you to the next level. And it's like anything else, realizing that that's okay. Here are some of the ideas that have come up. We've got some interesting DIY lab tools that have come out of the lab, a new gel box. We've got some very popular community projects that are coming to fruition. The bioprinter project, it's doing quite well. Bioluminescence project. Some embryo companies and embryo scientists coming through the lab. These are some of the things they're working on. So as you can see, there's a whole lot of activity. We've even been approached by some corporate partners who have said, we really like what you're doing. We want to get some visibility and come talk to the people that are hanging out, but I'm curious, can we do that? And we'll give you some money so that we can do that. We said, this slide is interesting because the girl in the top picture is 8 years old, and the man standing directly behind her is the instructor for a class where they're taking E. coli and infusing it with GFP. The men that are flanking her, she's showing men how to do it because she's had this experience before. We really would like to bring back the salon scientist, where science is something that's discussed openly and really brought into the mainstream. We're working with the SynBio startup Launchpad, which just launched last month. It's the synthetic biology incubator run out of Singularity University. So that's very cool. There's an assay depot contest that's just finishing, and the press release is coming. I was working on it this morning, so you'll see that shortly with the announcement of the winners. Teal Fellowship. So, in conclusion, I'll keep it brief. Some things we've learned. We have more members than we had planned on having at this point in time. We have a lower, we have a lower entry point than we thought we'd have in terms of monthly membership. We do more frequent classes with smaller numbers of students. And so what that means is that there's something happening at the lab a lot. Not every day, but more days than not. And the class size is much smaller. So for the people that are actually attending, you're getting more hands-on time with the actual instructor. And people are really liking that. And those are some of the takeaways. So, you know, if I had it to do over again, in terms of budgeting, I would budget for more frequent classes, smaller numbers, more often. And that tends to work well for us. Our Saturday morning science classes are 70% female, so that just makes me happy. But looking back on it, when I was putting this together, I thought, okay, what's the most important thing we've done in the last year? The most important thing we've done is the fact that we actually finally did it. And so I know people are at different stages in projects and where you're at and what you're working on, but the fact that you're doing something and the fact that you're trying and that you're making things happen, I think that's the most important thing that we can do as a movement, because it isn't a movement unless we move. So I'm going to skip through all this. This is where it started, in that garage. Joseph looked familiar. And from here, we've been able to do some really cool things. I'm very, very excited about what we've done. I'm even more excited about where we're going. And I'm sorry I ran a little long, but I'm very excited about the things that we're up to and look forward to having you guys all there on Thursday and happy to take any questions.
Why we're doing what we're doing. I think we're all here for about the same reasons. so I'm not going to go into great depth about our mission and what we want to foster. We provide what we call a community lab space. We decided to call it community lab because it sounded less dangerous than biohacker space, but we've recently gotten a little more militant and have started to sometimes refer to ourselves as biohackers. And we have lots of outreach programs, which I'll describe a little bit of. That's our lab. It's a very messy picture, but that was during a recent class. That's our non-BSL1 area. That's our desk space. When we have classes, we basically sit people around that big table and we project onto that wall on our projector with our projector. And the lab itself, the first space we had was that glass enclosed space. Although there's actually a smaller lab on the other side of that wall, but it's mainly equipment. And here's a closer view of the smaller space. Those are some high school kids doing a project in the lab with their teacher. That's a view now out, looking out from the window to the part you couldn't see in the first picture, to a new space that we've taken over in the building a little bit more. And you can see various stuff there, microscopes and the PCR machine. And that thing on the upper right is probably an FBI agent's nightmare. It's a homemade incubator that we have a guy who's working on a microbial fuel cell. He has bacteria that grow best in nitrogen atmospheres. So he came in one day. He actually carried this thing on the subway at like 3 in the morning. It's an upside down, like one of those storage containers you buy at the Kmart or something, with two holes cut in it and like air conditioner or dryer duct, kind of flexible things with two rubber gloves on the end of it into this box, and a tank of suspicious looking gas attached to the side. Anyway, that's sitting in the lab right now. These are some of the projects we're doing. I'm doing a lot of DNA barcoding. Oliver has this high altitude microbial sampling project. We were approached about an estrogen biosensor in yeast. An environmental group wants to monitor some of the waterways around the New York area. Nuri is working on a really cool bacteria that makes these almost fractal patterns called the vortex. There's an artist who wants to do DNA portraits, which means she collects hairs off the street and does some PCR on parts of the genome that have SNPs that relate to physical characteristics, and she's going to try and make portraits of people without ever having seen them. There's plant biology going on. We've been doing Arabidopsis, and there's a guy who's working on moss, whose scientific name I can't remember. We had a student that did this really cool project. He was a sort of an art technology student, and he took NIH-3T3 cells, which, by the way, are biosafety level 1. Claudia Mickelson from MIT, who's the biosafety officer there, and is on our board, said it was fine to do mouse and bovine cells. He transformed them with this plasmid so that they change colors when they go through the cell cycle. And microbial fuel cell I talked about. We've got an iGEM team that's working trying to do a bacterial cellulose project. So those are the sorts of things. You can see the range of organisms we're working with and sort of our capabilities. It's all biosafety level 1. This is just some pictures of the, that's a plant in Alaska I barcoded. That's the Arabidopsis. That's us up on the roof with the balloons for Oliver's microbial sampling project. That's some P. vortex plates. And if the movie would play, those cells would be running around the plate changing colors, but it's not playing. You'll have to trust me, they do. He took some really cool time-lapse photography. We have a bunch of student programs we've done. We had an iGEM team last year on the bottom right, and we're doing another this year. This is through local universities. For some reason, no university in New York wants to commit to having an iGEM team. I have no idea why. We've tried Columbia, we've tried NYU. We've tried to get people interested. And last year we dragged Cooper Union and some Columbia students together with the universities kicking and screaming, and this year it's NYU. But the team is like for people from all over, because nobody can get their school to do an iGEM team. So they're doing it at GenSpace. Synbio Bridge is a program that Sung was running where he had high school students from needy areas and he was taking them and training them and doing a combination of trying to improve software for synthetic biology and training them in synthetic biology. And student internships sort of on an ad hoc basis. Oh, the Urban Barcode Project was cool because the Sloan Foundation funded this huge project in New York City. And the students would get all the reagents and supplies for free. And they could come to different centers to do the work if they didn't have the equipment in their school. And they made GenSpace one of the centers. So we had about half a dozen teams of high school students who were coming in barcoding stuff. So, and that lasted for a couple of months. And it was cool. I went to the awards dinner last week, and it was really funny to see Bruce Stilwell, the president of Cold Spring Harbor, saying the word GenSpace. I like that. Cold Spring Harbor was administering the program for the Sloan Foundation. So these are some of the classes and workshops. And I think it's great the way we all steal from each other. We definitely want to steal the bioluminescence idea from the people that are doing it. That sounds like a great class. And anyone's welcome to steal any of our classes. We pretty much do a lot of the things that you can do with the PCR machine. Really interesting, DNA storytelling was a cool class. That was something that Dan ran. It was like almost like a writer's workshop where they looked at science fiction's ability to predict the future and then looked at what science fiction was saying about biotech and talking about what it may predict. Outreach, we've done a whole bunch of outreach. God, so much outreach, and there's so few of us. there's just a lot of stuff that we get asked to participate in, and we always say yes. So it's been quite crazy. And then lastly, I'd just like to give a shout out to all the biosecurity stuff we participated in. We started out with a meeting at Science House in New York with our local Pat O'Brien, our local WMD coordinator. And now we even have given some joint presentations with him to the public. And then, of course, the FBI, some biobuilding bridges, the FBI DIY. Some of us have been tapped to go to WMD basic training sessions and tell them the difference between a math lab and a bio lab. We had a number of meetings at AAAS. Matt Cowell was at one of those, and those were pretty intense. We had everybody do strawberry DNA extractions at once, in one of those, that was kind of funny. The Code of Ethics conferences that Jason and Todd run. And we were even asked to talk at the United Nations at the WMD branch office for disarmament affairs. For the people who know the UN, it's that the 1540 committee people, 1540 resolution people. And then last but not least, DITRA has asked us to participate in several meetings, and that's been kind of fun. I guess for the future, we only seem to have about a dozen members at a time. Our membership is a little bit different, I think, from the BioCurious membership. It's more like come in and meet us and talk to us. You can't do it online. Maybe the New York scene is different. I think each one of these groups is going to probably have a completely individual flavor depending on the community they're in. One of the things that struck me when I was looking at the slides that were just shown is I'd say one-third of our community is probably artists and designers, and much less heavy on the entrepreneurs and much heavier on the creative scene in New York. And it may just be that's what the population, we don't have a huge number of biotech companies in New York. It's too expensive to be there for them or something. So that's one thing. So we'd like to grow our community a little bit more. I think the other thing, and I think maybe a lot of us want this, we'd like to be a little bit more in touch with the rest of you guys. I mean, I always feel like we have these meetings and we're really interested in what everyone else is doing, but there isn't any kind of mechanism to, there isn't any like night when we Skype together or something. It would be kind of fun to have some kind of, I hate to say like a real structure for something like that, but I don't know. Maybe we talked about having an international night at GenSpace where we would Skype in with somebody from another country even, and we talked about, you know, other hacker spaces in the United States where we would have some point where we would do that. And I know some people were trying to set that up, and I don't know whether that ever went anywhere. But that's kind of like one of my goals for the future on that. And of course, the other goal is to try and get more funding, because right now we're completely self-funded. I mean, GenSpace financially is much more of a mess, I think, than PyroCurious. Maybe because the people that started it were more scientists than business people. So we run on the membership fees and what we get for the classes, and that's it. So it would be nice in the future maybe to get larger amounts of money in, either from corporate sponsors or grants or whatever. So I think that's probably the few areas where I think we really have this burning need to push. Does anyone else from GenSpace want to add anything?
That was a pretty good summary.
Yeah. All right. Oh, okay. Yeah. They've been nice enough to let me ask you guys this. I emailed everyone who was on that list. For some reason that I'm not quite sure of, I was asked to give a TED talk at a TED in Edinburgh, Scotland. And they said, we don't want you to talk about GenSpace. You can mention GenSpace, but what we really want you to talk about, since this is a global conference, this is TED Global, we want you to talk about the global DIY bio scene, which was absolutely terrifying to me, and I'm really, really glad I'm going to get to hear some of you talk, because I'm not aware of the global scene as much as I should be. And they only given me 11 minutes, so there's about enough time to like show one slide and not say anything about anyone, if I'm also to explain what DIY bio is to an audience that may never have heard of it. So I just got an email today saying that, I asked for slides for people, but I got an email today saying that they're going to make a video that's going to be a companion to my talk, where we'll be able to go into some more depth. And I was wondering if the people who were here, I'm particularly interested in the international people. If you want, we have a camera with video capabilities. If you could just say a few words or anything that you might want to say to the general public about your organization, how cool it is, anything you want to talk about your organization. The guy who's doing the video said he would love to receive those clips. Or maybe even you could send him something directly. But remember, it's probably not going to be all that long either, so keep it really punchy, and there's a good chance that it may get online. The other thing is that Oliver had this great idea. They give away a lot of swag at TED conferences, and we actually, they're having a little maker space, so MakerBot's going to be there, we're going to be there, and someone else, I forget, is going to be there. But if you have any stickers, any flyers, anything that you like to give out, that you would like to see all those rich people at TED get, and possibly be interested in you, and maybe even fund you, or something, let us know, and we'll try to coordinate it, so we'll have all that stuff. So anyway, that's all I want to say.
So what I'm going to talk about is Biospace, which is a Victoria, BC-based biohacker space that is now growth of a more manufacturing-focused hacker space called makerspace.ca. We're really new. Chris Constable here and I just founded the biology portion of Biospace earlier this year. Really just in the very earliest stage of our growing pains. The way I want that Carlo mentioned in his talk. And it's got the hood around it because UV polymers are really stinky. But this is all home-built projects, and I really wanted to sync up with other people who have an interest in 3D printing. Because the more people we get doing builds of these, the faster we get to a microfluidics prototyping platform, and the more things we'll be able to do with this community. So homemade equipment is the first equipment trend. There are so many things that people are buying that we can easily produce ourselves, particularly as you start to get electronics and biology emerging. There's a color project on Kickstarter right now that's an example of this. The OpenPCR project is an example of this. We really need a spectrophotometer open source project. It'd be an easy one to knock off and get a lot of traction in the community. We can really do great things with making our own equipment. The second equipment talk that I wanted to is actually the used equipment talk. So I think we can get a lot better as a community about finding the deals in used equipment, finding the deals in auctions that are going on than we have been. I live on Vancouver Island, which is pretty small and rural for most of it. And so when a biotech company goes down in Vancouver Island, man, it's just fire sale prices. This company called Cellfor, they cloned Christmas trees. And they expanded to where they had about 200 technicians just cloning Christmas trees every day. And then the bottom dropped out of the market. So the two glow hoods that you see here, these are 8-foot long glow hoods, HEPA filter, about a $10,000 glow hood new. Vancouver Island could not absorb 90 glow hoods in the course of a single auction. So my glow hoods came for $25 each. And the kind of deals that drop off these auctions that, boy, I wish I could have sent each one of you a glow hood and just paid shipping. We can find great ways of trading and sharing on these deals.
Where's my fume hood?
I want a fume hood out of this too. They only had one fume hood, or it would have been mine. So basic equipment, a lot of stuff has come on eBay, a lot of stuff has come used. Actually, I think everything has come used. The other thing in terms of equipment and reagent prices that I'd love to see us getting better at as a community is the disparity in reagent prices suppliers is just overwhelming. I mean, order of magnitude kind of thing in some cases. At home, when I use X-Gal, which allows the e-promoter to function, so you make your agar plates with it, I pay $14 for 100 milligrams of X-Gal. Down here, change suppliers, couldn't be my usual supplier, $71 for 100 milligrams of X-Gal. It's just amazing the pricing differences between different suppliers. And we ought to get as a community better about finding out which suppliers deal with DIY bio people best and which ones have the best prices and kind of get the best practices around that. One of the things that I would love to see is echoing Ellen's comment about us all working together better and getting together in Skype format and stuff. At BioCurious, I had a little telepresence robot running around. At first was calling him Biot, but then Google canceled my account because it wasn't a real name, so he's now John Biota. But John Biota runs around and is attached to a Skype call. On Skype, if you call into Biot Bioc, you end up on the classroom side of BioCurious and can talk with whoever happens to be standing there. We did this for a journal club meeting last night and actually had our journal club presenter being remote presenting the paper over the Skype link and the projector projected up on the wall. And it actually works really, really well. With a premium Skype account, as long as one person has a premium Skype account, you can do a group Skype chat. And I'd love to see these journal clubs and these meetings and just be able to share speakers and projects and do more of this online collaboration with each other. So the last thing that I have to talk about here is just the importance of becoming an actual space and actually how you get through some of the legal formalities and get this to be a little bit more legitimate than a garage lab. I went through this myself in Canada. I was walking out of the firm house I was renting by our makerspace and had my lab in the basement or in the garage. I slipped on the ice, fell down the steps, couldn't move, had to call an ambulance, and had this thought of, oh my God, am I going to jail because my garage door is open and they think this is a meth lab? I didn't. My girlfriend got home and closed the garage door, but getting legit. I found with setting up Biospace is that you really still have a hard time doing this as a community lab. The story of Sunnyvale being receptive to BioCurious and going through all those buildings first. The story of GenSpace is 2 years to find a space. The trick that I found that I cut through a lot of that red tape with Biospace is being a little bit quiet about calling it a community lab. Biospace technically is my biotech startup space, and after getting turned down by two insurers, as I walked around saying, will you insure me for a community biology lab, and they're saying, community what? Walking in saying, this is my biosensors biotech startup, will you insure me? Get $300, here's your policy, go out the door. And then there's nothing preventing me from opening that lab up for classes, opening it up to the loan to people to come in. Through a strange little twist that I didn't even plan, my accountant said, oh, that's great, Derek, you can even get a tax deduction because you're loaning your personal business space to a nonprofit. And so there are all these ways of doing it, kind of treating it as a business and not quite on the slide, but just do it the path of the least resistance, but make it official, and it saves a whole lot of headache. Anyways, that's what I had to say about Biospace. We can talk about a lot of cool technical stuff on Thursday. I'm really looking forward to leading you through the Thursday lab and showing you some of the specific things that we're working on there. Thanks.
Start back up. If we have individuals that are interested in presenting, we'll just let you know when we can start back up. Thank you.